Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time. You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down.
Cruise, man. Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concession stand. You going to the bathroom. Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to do some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, if you guys are getting your seats, I'm going to sing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's time to... I put it down the babies, put down the pepperoni.
Let's go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, game time!
Hey, welcome to another Parents Coaching Parents Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, M.A. Scott, another wonderful show we're going to do this evening. I guarantee you it's going to be a good show because we're doing it live from the Mike Scott, Atlanta Hawks Mike Scott, second round draft pick Mike Scott from the Atlanta Hawks, currently doing his camp out of VA, and we're going to do this show directly from his basketball camp. So get your pens and papers out, and if you're in the area, come on out and join us, and we're looking forward to seeing you out here, and hopefully we can get some interviews and some comments from some folks today and see how things are going and see if they're enjoying the camp and if the camp's working out to their advantage, you know, and if they're actually learning something. Hopefully I'll get a couple of these young folks to just sit down and give us some insight on what they picked up from the camp today. Here in a minute I'm probably going to kick in my man, Mr. Keith Wright, but I just want to talk about this camp today because this camp is on the very same day as his draft 2 years ago, the 28th of June, which was the exact day that he was drafted 2 years ago. And it's a big milestone for him, something that he's been looking forward to. It has always been a dream of his. This is a turning point. This is something that truly shows that this young man is on the right path. This young man is on the right path. There are a number of great volunteers out here today that's going to be out here helping out with the camp, starting out with my man, Mr. Justin Martin. Justin came out, took out of his busy day, came out and spent some of his time with us and, assisted with some of the basic stuff, you know, getting equipment, you know, moved and getting equipment ready and, you know, all that other kind of stuff. So, you know, just some of the basic stuff, just get the show rolling, just get the ball rolling. But as always, you know, I got to start out with my man, Mr. Keith Wright. So I'm going to go ahead and kick in Keith's song here.
Student of the game, had people front and talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friends. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
And with the 43rd pick in the 2012 NBA Draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Mike Scott, from the University of Virginia. And with the 43rd pick in the 2012 NBA Draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Mike Scott from the University of Virginia.
How do you meet and pick your agent?
They meet and pick you.
No, they don't.
Picking agents is just like picking a college. Soon as they hear about, there's a pretty good eighth grader. There's a ninth grader that can walk and chew gum.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tenth grader. We're going to see what's going on with his uncle. Let's see what's going on with his sister. Let's see what's going on with somebody in his circle. One of the coaches, an AAU coach, we're going to get in his circle. And that person is going to be the sounding board back to the agent in a lot of different cases. And more than one agent, by the way. Recruiting is a dog-eat-dog world. You got to get grandma.
Really?
Oh, no doubt. If they got grandma, you got
to
get
grandma. You
got
to go to grandma.
Side. Yes, indeed.
In this agent recruitment process, is champagning and campaigning involved?
Absolutely. With everyone I just mentioned, every step along the way, if it's going to help get me closer to the player, get me closer to the mom or the dad or to the uncle or to the AAU coach or to the player or to whoever's making a quality decision, absolutely yes.
See, this is one of the reasons I like doing this podcast, because I didn't know any of this stuff about 20 minutes ago. And now it makes a lot more sense. I'm about to quit my job and become an NBA agent.
It's almost like if I was a high school player right now and I was an All-American doing this podcast with you, there would be agents and college coaches and recruits trying to holler at you to gauge how close you are to me, and they're going to gauge that on how much influence you're going to have on my decision, whether 1% or 99%.
And if, let's say, it was a high percentage, would they give me money?
They would do a lot of things for you. All of a sudden, Jacoby got on a new job.
They might not write a check, but that'd be taken
Jacoby
care of.
Jacoby working at some summer camp.
I need a table at this restaurant tomorrow.
Yes, indeed.
It's
who
done.
Your favorite artist? Oh, you like Jay-Z? I'm about to call him right now.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's how it works. And sometimes, in a few cases, the player doesn't know that this is happening. So it's snakes on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's a snake in your circle. It's a snake that's allowing this to happen from the outside, whether it's a college coach or agent, but it's not personal because it's business. They are credible agents. They are very good college recruits. They're excellent college coaches, but money's involved. Big business is involved.
Tell me about the relationship between the athlete and the agent.
When you have somebody to represent your best interest, you're really not on the phone when they make the calls on your behalf. So you hope that they're speaking your language or representing your best interest. But you don't know what they're on the phone saying to a contractor or an endorser or a potential sponsor. You don't know what he's on the phone saying to a GM. You don't know what he's on the phone saying to an owner. You're just hoping that he's relaying the message that you're giving him. But you don't know.
How does that feel?
It makes you feel dumb.
Yeah.
But it's the professional part of it that it teaches you that you're just a worker. You're just a cog in this. He's going to be an agent for 30 years. You're going to play for 3 years. And when that's the case, there's always going to be some shady business.
Of course. I just want to clarify. I don't think you're saying the business itself is shady, but there are shady aspects when
like
you're talking about multi-million
Conquest,
dollar.
NSG rule number 10,080. Recruiters and agents are shady.
Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that little piece there here on the Parents Coaching Parents Network. You know, just as we listened to Jalen Rose there, one of the great players, if we remember him from back in the days of Michigan and Fab Five, you know, Jalen was one of those players that actually identified and acknowledged some things going on in the sporting industry that oftentimes we have a tendency to overlook. And what I'm talking about right now, I'm just simply talking about, you know, one of the things that he mentioned was, you know, back then in the day, one of the things that he mentioned was how athletes, you know, they're out there and they're making, playing this game and playing their hardest and doing everything that they can do. And at the same time, There's a bunch of folks making a whole lot of money, and the athletes are barely able to buy them a slice of pizza, buy themselves a slice of pizza, or put gas in their car. Whereas, you know, Jalen was one of those athletes that stood up and acknowledged that, and him along with Chris Webber and a couple others, and just actually just started saying, hey, folks, we have to do something about this. Athletes, we got to do a better job at what we do to make sure folks understand and realize that we're not just dumb jocks anymore. And I stress that point because, you know, listening to the opening where we had, my man, Mr. Keith Wright, and we was talking about making smart cool. You know, that was a very big piece there, very big piece, because it's important that our athletes, young men and women, understand that being smart is okay to be smart. It's okay to be smart. It's okay to be smart and be an athlete. And that's a point that, you know, I stress each and every time I try to get a chance to talk to parents and everybody else and let them know it's okay to be smart. You know, hit those books, get an education. That way you can sit back and decide your own destiny. You know, that's one of the things that Mike did. That's why I'm so happy to be a part of this camp with him today. And that's one of the things that he did. You know, he understood that it was okay to be smart. And he understood that, hey, the sky's the limit. The sky's the limit. And as long as he understands that, and as long as he knows that, he's going to be successful. He's going to be successful. Again, we're here at the Mike Scott Camp. I'll be going down and getting some information for you here in a minute. They haven't started yet, but I see a number of folks lined up outside. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at PCP Network. Find us on Facebook at the Parents Coaching Parents Network. And also, look at us on Instagram at PCP Network as well. Well, I'm going to walk now here and see what's going on with the camp. Like I said, I'm going to be tweeting. I'm going to be sending out pictures. I'm going to be trying to put it all out there for your information this morning here at the Mike Scott Basketball Camp.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
Got there at 4 a.m. He all ready to rock and roll. Got on the suit. Should have wore short. The old man grabs his hand back. How bad do you want to be successful? He said, real bad. He said, walk on out in the water. So he walks out into the water. Watch this. When he walks out into the water, it goes way deep. So he's like, this guy crazy. Y'all. I want to make money. He got me out here swimming. I didn't ask to be a lifeguard. I want to make money. He got me So he said, come out a little further, walk out a little further. Then he had it right around this area, the shoulder area. So this old man crazy. He's making money, but he's crazy. He said, come on out a little further. He came out a little further. It was right at his mouth. My man like, I'm about to go back in here. This child is mine. But the old man said, I thought you said you wanted to be successful. He said, I do. He said, walk a little further. He came, dropped his head in, held him down, hold him down. My man, Jim scratching, holding him down. He had him held down just before my man was about to pass out. He raised him up. He said, I got a question for you. He told the guy, he said, when you want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll be successful. I don't know how many of y'all got asthma here today, but if you ever had an asthma attack before, you short of breath, SOB, short of breath, you wheezing. The only thing you're trying to do is get some air. You don't care about no basketball game. You don't care what's on TV. You don't care about nobody calling you. You don't care about a party. The only thing you care about when you're trying to breathe is to get some fresh air. That's it. And when you get to the point where all you want to do is be successful, as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll be successful.
Well, we are from the back on the Parents Coach of Parents Network, and we're going live from the Mike Scott's basketball camp, as always. You know, we do what we do. We're going to make it happen any way we can. You know, the sad part about it, we're sitting here, we're waiting right now, can't get nobody coming to open the door, and I'm kind of like getting ticked there because we can't get the door open, but at the end of the day, hopefully we're going to make it good for all the people and make sure that everybody gets in and gets a chance to have some fun there. That's what it's all about. It's all about having fun. It's not all about Mike. It's not all about, you know, the parents or whatever. It's all about having fun. So at the end of the day, we're going to make sure that everybody gets the best out of this here. And I'm really, really ticked because we should have been here in the building a few minutes ago. And hopefully we can make that happen and get everybody in because we've got folks lined up outside the building trying to get in. But, again, we're here from the Parents with the Parents Network. I'm your host, M.H. Scott, and we're going to be broadcasting live from the network and making sure that everybody gets a chance to get in and have some fun. What I'm going to do, I'm going to try to assess the situation here a little bit more, so I'm just going to put on some audio track for us to listen to and try to get a better feel for what's going on here and why we're being held up and can't get into the facility. So hopefully we're going to make things happen, and I'll be right back with you.
Every
I'm gonna play
year,
some audio for you
of
something I listened to last week on ESPN. So I'll be back with you at the Mike Scott's basketball
days,
camp.
I may know
you
some
have a great day. We haven't gone all the way.
Now
we're just gonna play some audio track for you.
Professor, come and turn around and run the other direction because they don't want you to have contact because in some ways that will be perceived as a negative, which I disagree with. I think that I would have a great relationship with faculty members, but that's the way the NCAA has moved.
College basketball coaches are held accountable for the grade point averages, the academic progress, and graduation rates of their players. But some say they are not encouraged to interact with the faculty. The contradiction of being judged by wins and losses, as well as academics in an era where they are told to keep their distance from the scholastic side of campus. A discussion and a debate today, Outside the Lines.
And now, sitting in for Bob Lee, Andy Katz.
Coaches are in a tricky predicament. They are hired to win first and run an NCAA clean program, and they are held responsible for the academics of their players, the majority of which, at major programs, chose the school and coach because of the basketball program, more than the academic profile of the school. Yet if there is any unethical behavior on the academic side of the school, as alleged by 2005 North Carolina national champion Rashad McCants, then the head coach can be held responsible or be forced to defend himself against inflammatory charges.
I didn't write any papers, but I know that the tutors did help guys write papers as far as help them through the grammar, the structure, paragraphs, so on and so forth. But for some of the premier players, we didn't write our papers.
I don't select classes. I don't sit down with the player and say, well, this class is this and this class is that, because I don't have that knowledge. We have a very defined system here at the University of North Carolina. I have somewhat control over the basketball program. I don't have control over the academic side.
You're not there to get an education. You're there to make revenue for the college. You're there to put fans in the seats. You're there to bring prestige to the university by winning games.
Let's discuss this ongoing dilemma facing college coaches on how much they should or can get involved in academics when they are held accountable for the actions of their players in and out of the classroom. Joining me now, Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo, Fresno State head coach Rodney Terry, Arizona State head coach Herb Sendek, and ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg, a former head coach of Virginia Tech, South Florida, and Long Beach State. Seth, I want to start with you first. You're out of coaching now for a couple of years. What should be the responsibilities for a head coach and academics?
I think a head coach's responsibility is to make sure that student athlete doesn't lose track of their academic objectives once they get on campus. Now, coaches are going to graduate every young player that wants to get a degree. Rashad McCants obviously did not want to get educated. He chose not to be educated. But at the schools I've worked at, a couple things. One, I agree with Roy Williams and SBF. You are not allowed to talk to professors. You're not allowed to talk to learning specialists, and you're not allowed to talk to tutors. But what you can do is meet with your academic advisors. I met every single Monday at 10 o'clock with Katie Ammons, my academic advisor at Virginia Tech, and we went over each and every player in every class, what they had done in the past week, what they had to do moving forward, to make sure that I understood what was going on, so that when we were in practice, I could ask a kid, hey, you got a test coming up. Are you ready? Are you using the study hall? Are you taking advantage of the tutors? The thing that's kind of a slippery slope, Andy, is that, again, there are two types of tutors. There are facilitators and there are enablers, just like there are two types of coaches. The best tutors are facilitators. They teach those young people how to learn. The enablers, that is dangerous. Those are rogue tutors. That's maybe the problem that maybe some institutions have. And as a head coach, you have no control over that because you're not allowed to communicate with those people.
Seth, you say that. Roy Williams said that. Tom, you were shaking your head. But according to the NCAA, there's no rule that you cannot call a professor. So why can't you talk to a member of the faculty?
Well, when I was a GA here, you know, 30 years ago, 28, 9 years ago, I was the academic person, so it was great. I got to get relationships, and it's all about relationships and accountability. Had relationships with profs. I worked for a guy that if I called a prof and he said that they're missing classes, they were in more trouble when they got back here. You know, it's such a, you know, Seth calls it a slippery slope. I call it confusing. We're supposed to have all this ability to handle things and all this, I guess, pressure on us to graduate players, hold them actually to a higher standard than the university does because of progress towards degree and that. So when they talk about being able to take just any classes, I don't know what it's like other places, but here at Michigan State, it's so regimented, you have to navigate. We have a great guy. Jim does an incredible job here for us in our Smith Center, but he answers to the provost. And I think it helps widen the gap between athletics and academics. And to be honest with you, it disappoints me thoroughly.
Tom, you said as a GA 30 years ago, you talked to professors. How often have you talked to a professor now?
If I see him on the street or at the grocery store, you know, otherwise I'm afraid to. And that sounds a little ridiculous and with a little venom to it, but I'm telling you the truth that, you know, I do not like the way we've done it, personally. I think here at Michigan State, the better relationship I had with a prof or a player or a parent, more things are going to get done. And I just can't see myself doing it, strong-arming a prof, number one, or a prof taking my strong arm, number two. So I don't understand that. And you talk about the tutors that Seth did. Those are the same tutors that are tutoring other students that are in the same kind of classes. So I think sometimes we get a bad rap, and these rules are made for 10% of the problems or the coaches or players and not 90%, because I think 90% of them are doing one heck of a job.
Rodney, you just got a contract extension, and in the contract, you have incentives if you are at a certain grade point average your team is, APR score, grad rate. So if you have those incentives in your contract, why can't you be more involved in the academic side of your players?
Well, I think it's a fine line, Andy. I think obviously we stress and place a high emphasis on guys getting an education and guys coming to our institution with the intentions of graduating. We have, you know, really good academic advisor on campus. And again, we don't have contact with professors on our campus as well. But I think it's a huge responsibility and a lot of accountability with your staff, you know, and tracking what your guys are doing academically. I know Seth talked about meeting once a week. We meet once a week, I think, which also helps us get organized for the week, understand what guys have on their schedules right now, what type of tests they're taking. But I think, again, if you place the emphasis on the student first and not so much about, you know, what you have in your contract as a bonus in terms of academic success, and you focus on the individual, everything else kind of takes care of itself.
Herb, you've been at a couple of different kinds of institutions, Miami of Ohio, private school, or at least a school where certainly it's looked at more as an academic institution. Now, in the past two jobs, you've been at large state universities, NC State, and now Arizona State. How has it changed for you in terms of your relationship to the academic side of campus?
It really hasn't. You know, I think our job starts with providing standards and expectations for the men in our program. So, for example, when we first started here at Arizona State, during the spring, we had a team that was underperforming academically. So it was my decision as the head coach to lock the doors to the gymnasium, increase study table hours, to send a message that academics are important to our program, and more importantly than that, help the young men finish as strong as possible.
Seth, you brought up that you met weekly with your players to find out their grades. How often do you think that occurs where the head coach is that in tune, from what you said, as to exactly what courses their players are taking and when they have exams or maybe papers due?
I can't speak for anyone else, but I would think that on most universities, the head coach is involved. I mean, you're going into the living room of this young person, and you're telling them, all right, what are your goals? And every single kid you recruit tells you, you know what? They want to graduate. And I used to talk to the kids about looking down a tunnel. Well, if you want to graduate, you got to class on time, you worked with your tutors, all right, you did your assignments, you were accountable for what you were supposed to do. And to me, if it's important to you, it's going to be important to your players. To me, if rebounding is important to you and you hammer that each and every day, you know what? Your team's going to probably be a pretty good rebounding team. Well, if you're involved in the academic well-being for your student-athletes, if you're involved on a daily basis, when they come to the gym, say you had a SOCH test the other day, how did it go? If those players know that you're on top of it, they're going to be on top of it most times. The problem we have is sometimes a young player's academics are more important to the coaches than they are to the players, and not because of bonuses, because at that stage of their lives, all they're thinking about is getting to the league. That's the reality that we live in. When you hear Rashad McCants talk about, well, I was there to make money, no, you weren't. All right? Roy Williams didn't want you to make money. He wanted you to be the best player you could be, win as many games as we can win, and do the right thing. Now, you chose to go in a different path, but I would say most of the coaches in college basketball are involved with their players academically, and it's a point of emphasis. If you lose track of it, they will lose track of it. You know, to me, again, Andy, it comes down to the environment that you create within your program. And, you know, to me, if a young person goes to college and they embrace the opportunity to get an education, to be educated, to learn how to learn, they're going to be better off for it. And I think most coaches emphasize that.
Tom, you've had a lot of four-year players at Michigan State. When you are recruiting them in their home, how much does academics come up?
Well, it comes up a lot. I mean, you know, it's to be honest with you, I think the moms are always more interested in the academics. The dads are a lot of times more interested in the play, but moms rule in a lot of things, so that is a very important part. And yet, Judd Heathcote used to say something to me, and I agree, you know, we can't make a kid graduate. I mean, you know, we're trying to get a kid graduated in 4 years, and yet play on the road, weeknights, miss a lot of school. Unlike football that leaves Friday night and comes back Saturday night, we're not only missing a lot of school, we're getting back at 2, 3 in the morning, and it's difficult. And yet the standards we're held by are tougher than what a normal student would go through here. And so I think there's a perception out there that athletes just get to skate through. And again, like Seth says a lot of times, and I'm sure the other guys are saying, I don't know what it's like at every school, but I know what it's like at most Big Ten schools. And I'll guarantee you, it's not run that way. I mean, we're having them go to summer school. I don't think that's fair. I don't think a kid should have to go to summer school, year-round school. I think that's why we burn our kids out. But you got to do that to graduate them, and every coach is so fearful of all the different rules and where a coach can go and whether his scores travel with them. And the bottom line is what Seth said. The bottom line is you got to convince a kid, or Herb might have said it, that academics is important to me and my staff. And if it's important to us, then we got to make sure the parents know that, and we got to make sure the player knows that. But it's a little bit more difficult than people think, and perception becomes the rule, and it's not always, perception is not always correct in this case.
Seth, hold on there. I want to bring in Pitt head coach Jamie Dixon, who's now joining us, and we've referenced off the top what Roy Williams said earlier in an interview I did with him back in January about how we've moved to a different era where college basketball coaches are not supposed to talk to the faculty. Why is there such a lack of trust with a head coach talking to a member of the faculty, Jamie?
I don't think it's a lack of trust. I think it's just the proper way of doing things. I think you have experts in our situation. Our provost hires our academic support system. They work for our academic advisor works for the provost office, and their job and their expertise is in that area. And we're there to provide the discipline. If our guys aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing academically, we hold them out of practice. We hold them out of games, and usually just keep them out of practice or workouts is enough. And but that's, I think, the way that things should be do. I don't think it's a lack of trust. I think there's a lot of trust within our athletic department and all athletic departments.
But Jamie, you and all these other coaches,
Andy, can I say
yes? Jump in.
I don't mean to disagree, but I totally disagree with that. I think there's no relationship. How can you trust somebody you don't have a relationship with? You can hardly get a relationship with a professor. And if you can't get a relationship, I wouldn't trust anybody. If I was a player and he couldn't go in the head coach's office and talk to him, why would they trust each other? And worse, I am an educator. My degree's in education. And so that bothers me that we do not get the opportunity, because I'm a professor in my own right, too. I'm a teacher in my own right, too. And I just think because we don't have relationships, there is a lack of trust and a lack of accountability. And as much as I respect Jamie, I do not agree that everybody trusts everybody. In fact, I think coaches are not trusted, and that kind of bothers me personally.
Jamie, you want to respond?
Well, I think that they have a relationship with the advisors, the academic advisors, who work for our provost office, and so they're best at that. But as far as trust, I think the trust is amongst those, the academic advisor and the provost and the professors, and trying to get in the middle of that, you know, may bother some. But I think it's the best way of doing it. So that's what we've done, and it's been successful as far as our results. But, you know, there's different ways of doing things, and there are times where I guess coaches are not trusted, but, you know, that we can't cover for every coach.
Ronnie, you guys are held responsible for these grade point averages The NCAA posts your APR scores, and I should note that yours at Fresno State has moved up the last 3 years. The other three, for the last 7 years, they've had a thousand percentage on the APR, according to the NCAA. So if your stats are put out there by the NCAA, why can't you be more directly involved in the academics, Rodney?
Well, I think, again, I think it's such a fine line in terms of obviously it's being published there, and it's public news in terms of what your scores are. But again, I think it just gets back, again, to the whole accountability piece and what you stress and what's important in your program. You know, we go into a kid's home and we talk about academics, we talk about the importance of an education, we talk about wanting to graduate. And again, like was said earlier by Coach Sende, you know, it's going to be what you place on in terms of the kids also responding to that. But if there's a high emphasis on it, I think kids want to buy into structure. We use an honor system as well, where you hold kids accountable, where they've got to sign in every day. And so much of what we're talking about is communication or lack of communication in terms of trusting in the area of academics.
Herb, how often do you hear from a parent about their son's academic situation on campus?
Not that often. And in many cases, we try to be proactive and give them information in a timely manner so they're not surprised at the end of the semester. But it's rare when we have to reach out to a parent because their son isn't meeting expectations. Obviously, when we do have those occurrences, you know, we will reach out, and you know, we'll try to work together to get that young person doing the right things.
Seth, you've been shaking your head here.
It's interesting because during the recruiting process, parents are very interested in academics. That's the first question they're going to ask. They're going to want to meet with the academic counselors. Once that player gets on campus, parents are interested in two things: playing time and role. That's the reality. Very rare in all my time at Virginia Tech, maybe once or twice at South Florida, did I ever get a phone call from a parent about academics. Now, we kept them informed. We had a newsletter that went out every month. We sent them their syllabus and their academic schedules, their weekly schedules each and every week. But the reality is, once a player gets on campus, in the culture of college basketball today, parents are interested. Yeah, they would like for their son to get a degree, but parents are interested in playing time and role. Guys don't transfer academics. They transfer for playing time and role. That's it.
Tom, how much are college athletics right now a business or feeder for the pros versus an educational endeavor?
Well, unfortunately, I think we're becoming a business more and more and more, and I understand the whole process. But, you know, one thing we are getting away from a little bit here, and it sounds like all of us has had a lot of success academically. Now, I think we beat on it. We push it. I know some of these guys really personally, and I know that it matters to them. And I think there's more kids that are very good, too. What I don't like is if that academic thing went wrong, are they calling the provost? Are they calling the tutor? Are they calling out the coach? And if I'm going to be responsible to get blamed for something, I'd like to have the ability to do something about it. And that's the difficult part I have with this whole thing. And, you know, I still feel like personally that coaches don't get trusted enough. I understand because there's been some problems. But there's a lot of good things going on, too. And I know here at Michigan State, Jim Pignatero, my AD, Mark Hollis, my president, Luana Simon, who was our provost for 25 years or more, you know, we do work together, but I'm still against not being able to talk to a prof because I think most of those profs appreciate. I always tell them, I can't talk to you, but if you want to call me on somebody, we'll get it straightened out. And that's happened because I've been here long enough, and it's actually a fun process.
Jamie, you've been nodding your head. What about the fact that
you could be accused, or
they could certainly call you out if you have a player that's ineligible?
Well, I think as we're part of a team, just like we talked about roles, there's a role in academics as well, and everybody has theirs. Ours is to create a culture of striving to do the best they've ever done academically. We have a team goal of getting a 3.0 GPA, and we'll get the team together. And if we didn't get it, and if there's one guy that didn't get it done, and that's the reason why we get there, we put that guy's grades out there in front of the whole team. It's just like if they missed a block out or didn't get back on defense. So the peer pressure has been the best thing for us. I mean, our guys don't want to be the guy that kept us from being a 3.0, and that's been the best thing. But we all have roles, and, yeah, we'd love to. There's a lot of things we'd love to do, but calling a professor is just not one of them. And as Tom said, it is great when a professor does call us and let us know when a kid does well, because we get a lot of those calls also, but also when a kid doesn't. I would like that. But at the same time, we just can't reach out to a professor because of what it could entail or how somebody could take it. And that's just the way it is. Some things you got to live with. And we all have our roles in basketball on a team, but we also have our roles in helping these kids graduate and doing it. And ours is to provide discipline and a culture to be successful and to strive to graduate and have a team GPA of 3.0.
Tom Izzo, Jamie Dixon, Rodney Terry, Herb Sendick, Seth Greenberg, thanks for joining us on this topic here on Outside the Lines. And as always, you can continue the conversation on our Facebook page. You can follow the show.
We're back. Hey, on the Parents Coach of Parents Network, I'm your host, M.A. Scott, and we're doing a wonderful show from the Mike Scott Basketball Camp. Mike's getting ready to talk to the kids here in a minute, and Mike's going to talk to the kids for a minute, and before he get a chance to talk to the kids, we're going to go to this little piece by Mr. Keith Wright. Keith, where you at?
Yes, sir.
We're going up until 12.
Yeah.
That's restroom right there. Third door on your right.
Who was the student of the game? Had people trying to talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain. And if I succeed with that, then be bald.
Hey, all y'all great
thing. I can't complain. The situation that I'm in. Meeting different connects that turn out to be my friend. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end. And when the ball starts bouncing, I'm like the ball out the pen. But I'm hate dead. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands and in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and the knowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making small moves. That's how I do.
Okay, basically what we're
going to
do, Mike's
going
to get a chance to talk to the kids. Now we want to start the season at 10:30. So what we're going to do, Mike's going to talk to the kids, then we're going to break them down into age groups, 6, 7, and 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and all the girls. But what I need y'all to do, when we break them down into groups, two of y'all with that group, take that whole group over to whatever station they've been assigned to.
No, we can do it. Like, those kids go with, like, take two of them, y'all take
the group,
and everybody do
it. Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I was saying. He interrupted my, I'm trying to do a show here at the Mike Scott Basketball Camp and Parents Coach of Parents Network, but at the same time we're doing a briefing on what's going on. We got you. We're rocking and rolling, baby. We're rocking and rolling. Yeah, so whoever takes the first group, take that whole entire group, keep them together, take them to station number one. Whoever got the second group, keep them together, take them to station number two, station number three, station number four, until we get all six stations done and all the kids at the station. If I have to take a group over myself, I will. So right after Mike get done talking to them, then we're going to roll into breaking them down into age groups, and y'all be ready to start taking them all across to the gym. We got six courts over there. Each one of the coaches are already over there. They're already in place. They know who got what station based upon what you got on your sheet right there. And we be ready. You good? Hold on. It's going to make a difference who takes the group over there. We ain't going to start. We're going to start at 10:30, though. All right. All right. We coordinate things here again, trying to get this show rock and rolling here at the Mike Scott Basketball Camp. But until then, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to replay some of the information that we had from last week. and we'll come back to you in a few minutes.
Very much my pleasure to be with you this evening. I'm going to take a huge subject and make it very short. But this entire presentation is available through Andy, and a much longer version of this presentation is available through Andy. My name is Paula Brown. Yes. My name is Paula Brown, and I am a retired director of instructional accountability with Hampton City Schools. During my last seven years at Hampton City Schools, I worked in testing only. And so I've become a resident expert in several tests, and SAT is one of them. SOL Virginia is another. I often get I have an interesting moment because I'm an avid sports fan, and I read the sports page every day, and I read about some great kid, and I know that I'm helping them just graduate, much less take the SAT. And they have all this potential and all this interest, and they're not going anywhere because they're not even got the initiative to pass the Virginia Reading Test. And you have to pass your Virginia Reading and Writing Test to graduate. It's a law. And they can't give you any way out. So you either take it and pass it, or you don't get a diploma. And that means if you have to take it, and they have options to take it as many as 17 to 20 times before you graduate. But if you do not pass it, you do not get a diploma in Virginia. So that Virginia SOL test is very important for reading and writing. And everything else can be negotiated and worked around and figured out, but not the Virginia Reading and Writing Test. So take those very seriously. Also, in the SAT land, the qualifying score comes out of the reading and math. And a lot of people come in and say, oh, I got a 900 with three scores. And so that's not going to get them where they need to be. So I'm going to tell you, I'm a strategist, and so sports and strategy go along really well. And I believe in knowing your opponent. So when I sit down with a student, I tell them the SAT is your opponent. The better you know your opponent, the better chance you've got of getting what you need out of them. The SAT is all about intimidation. So if you don't think you can be intimidated, go ahead and try the SAT right out of the bucket without any prep work or getting ready for it, okay? Because it will knock you off your socks. And the reason is Virginia students are trained to take untimed exams from third grade till 12th grade. It's a law in Virginia that you can have an entire school day to take one exam. There's no student can be rushed to finish an SOL test. They're taught to answer every question and to work on the entire test thoroughly, and then they go into an SAT that's 10 exams, one after another, 20 minutes each, and you don't need to do all the items in an SAT to get a high score. Most kids have no idea what the SAT is about, how it works, and so forth, and that's why I'm here tonight, to give you a little insight on how it works. It's a very peculiar exam. Some parents will say to me, well, then I'll have my child take the ACT. Well, unless they're really fabulous in science, you shouldn't take the ACT as an app. Yes, sir? I just told you. The ACT has a science component. And it also is, the ACT is two or three long tests. So you sit for an hour or so with a test. Okay, it's still time, but it's a longer test, more similar to the kind of test you're used to. And also, if you leave something blank or you get something wrong, it counts the same as a wrong answer. And the SAT doesn't count that way. They do it completely differently, and most students don't understand how that works. So, yes, I am able to help a lot of students improve their SAT scores by teaching them strategy. But if you come to me and you have done nothing in your life to learn any English or any grammar or any mathematics, if you're in Algebra 1 and you're going to take the SAT, you're in a bad place. Because the SAT goes through Algebra 2. So you have to have that math and so forth. I'm a strategist. I can show you how to use what you know to get a higher score, but I can't put schooling in your head if you wasted your time in school, okay? And I'm being a little tough about that because it's a lot of money. Now, you say, well, lady, why are you doing this in sports? Well, there's lots of reasons for that, but my current reason is my nephew is on a full ride to BMI right now for kicking, and it's an amazing opportunity. My sister paid nothing. They pay for books. They pay for everything. It's unbelievable. And it's free because the boy can kick a ball. But when he got ready to take his SAT, we had to have a conversation and sit down and work through that just like he would be if he was going to play at another team in the high school league. So he's a local. He graduated from Mitchville. He's a state record holder. And so I'm very involved in football in Virginia. So I'm really interested, and I'd like to see kids get that money because it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of education, and it's a future. And it's ridiculous to pass that up. So SAT, a formidable foe. There are tests that stand between you and what you want to do. You have a choice. You can hope for the best or be prepared. And if you come into an SAT hoping, you're going to leave disappointed, trust me. What if it's not only about the content? Being prepared means knowing the essential things about the SAT. The best practice material. If you go to Barnes & Noble, there's an entire wall of SAT prep stuff. The thing is, you need to buy material if you're going to buy any, and a lot of it's free on their website. It needs to be written by College Board because they're the owners of the copyright. Everybody else has to tweak it a little to make it non-illegal to reproduce. So if you go to the source, then you pick the right place to go. Go get yourself online and use all the free material. If they're not sending you the SAT question of the day right now as a freshman, you're behind the mark. You need to start getting those questions every day into your email box and try them because you will get better at them as time goes on. That's where you start. College Board is the place where you get directions. And they have two mottos. They say, nobody knows our test better than we do. And they're right. Because they own it. And that's where you want to work. That's where you want to do all your work. Stay away from all the other materials because they can get you off track. I'm also going to tell you, I'd like you to use the materials, but I'm not crazy about the advice they give with the materials. You see, the advice is given to their advantage. Their test writer's advantage is not given to your advantage. So I'd like you to use the items, but I want you to use strategy that gets you the points you need for this test. The best thing you can get from this College Board experience is the directions. All the directions are given out ahead of time. If you read all the directions before you take the SAT, you won't have to wait seconds to read the directions. They are pre-released all the time. If you buy the little SAT practice book, it's about this thick, which is ridiculous, but it's filled with 10 released tests. These are the tests that were given to previous students, and they will give you plenty, plenty, plenty of practice, okay? Plenty of things you need, and they'll give you all the directions ahead of time, so you know exactly what you're facing. Like some kids go to the SAT and they don't take their calculator. Okay, a calculator in the math section is going to cost you 100 points, right off the top. So if you don't take your calculator, all the seconds you wait figuring out the math, is going to be 100 points at least. But guaranteed it's going to be 100 points. There's three content areas tested, reading, math, writing. There's 10 exams, and each one of the areas gets three each. So what does that mean in math? There's one test you take, the SAT then counts. It counts for the people who write the test, but not for you. And that's one of the things they do. They put a test in the beginning of your experience that you take, and you're gung-ho, and you're at your best, and it didn't even count. So you have to be very careful that you give your best on test number 10 as well as test number 1. You're going to go at 7:30 in the morning. You're going to stay there 5 hours, and you're going to take 10 exams back to back. Trust me, if you don't know that ahead of time, your body will not last long. Absolutely won't. All the answer choices, there are 5 answer choices per item. There's no graphics in English reading or writing. Very limited graphics in math. The good thing about the SAT math is it's straight math. It's not the SOL jumbled up, let's trick you today math, okay? It's very much just straightforward math. If you know your mathematics, you'll be able to excel in the math section, okay? That's very good news for people who are strong in math. There's not a lot of stuff to read through. Wrong answers count against you in every section except the student-produced responses in the math section. And you need to know that because it's preceded by problems where it does count against you if you get it wrong in the same section. So you need to do that part first because nothing can hurt you. And then do the eight problems in the front where something can hurt you. Okay? Blank answers do not count against you. An entire section is for field testing. I told you that. Now let me explain blank answers to you. Okay? This is the key piece of SAT. Understand. When you're in elementary school, your teacher may have given you a popsicle stick or a sticker or something for being good. Shake your head if you remember behavior rewards. Okay? And you would earn these rewards, and if you misbehave, some teachers would do what? Take them away. That's exactly right. Okay? So we're going to think about that little thing going on here. We're going to use popsicle sticks as your reward. So in the SAT, if you get an answer right, you get a popsicle stick. If you get an answer wrong, you give me back some of your popsicle stick. If you leave it blank, you keep your popsicle stick.
Don't get.
And you don't have to finish. Lots of kids go, oh, I've only got 2 minutes left, and I've got five problems. The five hardest problems on the test. I'm guaranteeing you, you're getting them wrong if you got 2 minutes left. So leave them blank. Then you don't lose your popsicle stick. I have kids who earn 650s but get 540s because they just answer everything. Why did they do that? Because they've been trained to do that by public school educators, of which I'm one, for their entire school career. Answer everything. Never leave anything blank. SAT, you need to leave things blank strategically. I have kids that think, oh, I've seen the whole thing blank. Well, you're going to get a crunch. Okay? It's all about getting what you get right and holding on to it and not letting problems go because I think I can figure that out. You answer what you know to answer. And here's what I tell students. The questions are in order from easy to hard. The easy ones count the same as the hard ones. I tell them, do every single easy and medium problem. If you don't get to the hard ones, nothing lost. But you should be able to do every easy and medium problem. And that will give you a very respectable score. Very respectable. Answers are in order from easy to hard in every section except for the reading part. And the reading part is different because it mixes the difficulty up, which means the first question could be the hardest and the second question the easiest. But basically, I tell students, go by how much they ask you to read. If you're asked to read one line, that's an easy question. If you're asked to read 2 to 8 lines, that's a medium question. And you're going to get about 20 to 30 of those. And then if it tells you to read the whole thing, the question says, after reading the whole passage, then you know that's a hard question. Skip that one and do the easy medium ones first. That way you've got the best chance of using your time to your advantage. Remember, you want to keep your popsicle sticks. Why spend 5 minutes on one hard problem that you're most likely going to get wrong? And I'm not insulting your ability. I'm acknowledging that PhDs write these exams, and they're really good at it. Anybody hear from Phoebus? Well, Phoebus football, Hampton football, they do a lot of things called intimidation tactics. So when Litchfield, that's where my nephew was playing, would go out to play Phoebus, they would come out with their benches loaded, bring in the JV team, put them behind, make everybody look like, whoa! And then when they would come to the line, they're huffing and they're grunting. The game hasn't even started, and the Mitchell player would go home. That's called intimidation. If you walk in an SAT and you haven't dealt with some of these things, you're going to look at those words and go, oh my gosh, are those words in the English language? Because they're purposely picked to intimidate you. That's done on purpose. So you've got to get past that intimidation and look for where you can do your best. So you're going to have to play Phoebus, or you're going to have to play that best team wherever they are. And you can defeat them. You can defeat them and get the best score you can get, and the best score that your ability can get if you know a lot about your opponent. There are three content areas. There's a possible 800 points for each one. The one that qualifies you for scholarship are these two areas of reading and mathematics. So you have a cost of 1,600 points there, and the NCAA is asking you to get anywhere from, you know, 800 to 900 to 1,000, whatever. If your GPA is really low, you're going to have to get a high SAT. Guys, if your GPA is very low, the chance of you getting a high SAT is just not going to happen. It's much easier to get your GPA up and get a reasonable expectation out of the SAT. Okay? That's what I'm telling you. Really work on that GPA. It's easier to improve your GPA than it is to go out and knock the SAT out of the ballpark. Unless you're a raving genius and you've just been playing a game every day at school. You know, just kind of like, I'm just brilliant. I didn't want to do anything at school. I don't know how that would happen, but I know it does. Okay? All right. The critical reading section has three parts. They're 25 minutes, 25 minutes, and 20 minutes long. You see the number of questions here? There are, of these 67 questions, 19 questions are filled in blank. I've worked with hundreds of students over the years, and that's where I see the biggest deficit. They don't know how to do the fill in the blank. The words are intimidating. They've seen the words before. They don't know what they are. They don't know how to do those kind of questions. So I'm, of all the skills that I can showcase here tonight, I'm going to showcase how to do the fill in the blank, because that's 19 questions you could get right if you really worked in that area, okay? Each section begins with sentence completions and continues through the passage, okay? These sentence completions go in order from easy to hard. They can have one or two blanks. Let me show you how the test writers play with you. They have eight questions. Some of them have one blank to fill in, some of them have two. What they do is they mix them up. Number one has two blanks, number two, one, number three, one, number four, two, number five, two, number six, one, number seven, two, number eight, one. Because they do that so that your brain has to ping pong between strategies. It's just like one of them goes here, next one goes here, now I go back to this one, go back to this one. So I tell students, do all the one blanks first, then come back and do all the two blanks. Or do all the two blanks first and come back and do all the one blanks. Then you're playing the game your way. Then you're playing it to your advantage instead of the test advantage. You see where I'm going with this? So if I teach you a strategy for the one blank, do all of those. And then do the strategy, which is completely different, for the two blanks all together. Because that's how you change your score. That's how you beat this guy who says it's his own game. Now I'm going to try to show you how this works. When there's one blank, 100% of the time, the answer to the blank is in the sentence. 100% of the time. And you know where students go or test takers go? They read the sentence and they see the blank and they immediately go to the choices. And they start sticking the choices in. Absolutely the wrong thing to do. When you look at the one blank, you read the sentence and you look for the answer. Then you go to the choices. If you have the answer in your head, you won't be ping-ponging over all the choices, okay? Now, here's what we're going to do. Normally, when I'm working with a student, I don't show them the choices because they immediately go to the choices and start sticking them in. And that's exactly how it says to teach you. Exactly. So what I'm going to show you is that food can be a blank element in family life, comma, bringing us together in times of trouble and times of joy. In the SAT, the answer to that blank is in the words of this sentence. If there is a punctuation mark here, a colon, a comma, a semicolon, and the blank is on this side, the answer is on the other side. If the blank is on this side of the comma, the answer is on the other side of the comma. In this case, food can be a blank element in family life. If I start sticking all those words in, every single word works. But they don't match the exact definition given in the sentence. In other words, bringing us together is the operative verb here, okay? These are prepositional phrases. If you don't know what a prepositional phrase is, you're going to have trouble with the SAT, right? These are phrases that amplify this set right here. Bringing us together is the exact definition of the answer. It is positive or negative?
Positive.
Okay? You want a positive answer. Now let's look at these words. An addictive. Addict is the root. Is it positive or negative? Negative. It's a negative word, okay? So could it be the answer? No. All right? Let's look at the second word. It starts with the letter C-O-N. Con. Positive or negative?
Negative.
Could it be the answer? No. The next word starts with U-N-I. What does the prefix U-N-I mean? One. Is that positive or negative? Positive. The next word starts with R-E. R-E means to do something again or go back. Is that positive, negative, or neutral?
Neutral.
It's neutral. Okay? R-E is a neutral prefix. And what about the last one? Starts with I-N. I-N. Is I-N positive or negative? Negative. Now, these words should be recognizable to you. When you take the SAT, they will look like Chinese. Okay? If you know your prefixes, all those little N, not, non, X, A, all these little things that come at the front of words, and know if they're positive or negative, you can't sort the Chinese. You can sort words, you have no idea what they are, if you know about prefixes and what they are. Okay? So, we have said to this list, negative, negative, positive, neutral, negative. What did we want bringing us together? Positive. So if it is Chinese, could we get the answer right? Yes. Do you know what people do when the words are when the words are words they don't know at all? They pick the word they know a little about, even though it has nothing to do with the sentence. See it all the time. If they recognize one word in the list, they pick that word. And that's exactly what you call a sucker punch, because you just failed the best trick they got. If you read their material, they'll tell you the fill in the blank is based on prefix, suffix, and root. The stuff you've been learning since the second grade. The prefix, suffix, and root that they use on the SAT come from the second, third, fourth, and fifth grade. That's it. No high-level prefixes, no high-level roots, absolutely no high-level suffixes. All second and third grade suffixes. So the SAT is not really the foe you think it is, if you know how they run their game. So, 100% of the time, the answer will be in the sentence. I challenge you to go look at all the free materials on the one blank, and you'll find it every time the answer is in the sentence. Answers in a sentence. But watch how fast you're going to go to the choices. When you're going to the choices, you're being distracted on purpose. And they're better than you are. Because that's all they do all day long is make up tests. And guys, if you get the answer right, they fail. If you get the answer right to all their questions, they get fired. If they can get you to pick the wrong answer every time, they get a bonus. Okay, so just remember that. Their job is not to support you. I'm trying to support you, but not the SAT. All right, when there's two blanks, okay, here's the first thing they want you to do. You're going to have two blanks in the sentence, and they're going to have paired words. Two words, two words, two words, two words, two words. They want you to take the two words and stick them in. Then go to the next one and take those two words and stick them in. See if they work. Then go to the next one, which makes you ping pong back and forth, like bang, 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 bang. That was right, that was wrong, that was wrong, that was right, that was right, that was wrong. I don't know which one's right. I don't know anymore, okay? Here's an easy way to get them right every time. Here's the way. You take this and draw a line right down the middle, okay? These words go with that blank. These words go with that blank. You can either predict the what goes in the blank in your own mind, and match it up, or you can use the words on the left or right. Now, if the words on the left and right are in Chinese, you're going to have to go with your first response, okay? But, hoping to blank the dispute, what word would go in that blank from your own mind? Hoping to blank the dispute. What would negotiators want to be doing when the dispute?
End it.
Okay, I want you to look at me, because all of you that are searching the choices, you are falling for the main trick they do. You see that? I'm watching you all do that. And I'm sitting here going, all of you are going to fail. Because you're drawn to go to the choices. When you take the SAT, you have to take your hand and lay them over the choices. Let me show you how smart they are. When you are reading an item in your peripheral vision, you are already considering choice A. Before you finish reading. And where do you got a lot of wrong answers. Because that's where the best thing is going to go. Because test writers study. You're on their bulletin board. Your picture is up there. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take these people out. Okay? And we're going to use intimidation. And we're going to use behaviors that they've learned in school and destroy them with them. Okay? So once you divide them in half like this, okay? So you said, hoping to what to dispute? Stop. Stop's a great word. Now, let's look at the words on the left. Which word on the left means to stop? In? What else? Resolve? Anything else? Overcome. Okay, we got three words that are similar to stop. Okay, now watch this. We said this one and this one are not correct, right? So we're going to mark them out, but we're going to take our pen and go all the way across. Okay? When you go all the way across, you eliminate the answers that would have made you question. Because what's left is one positive and two negatives. Divisive, unattractive, acceptable. When you have two negatives and one positive and one blank, what's the answer? The one is by itself. You don't have to know anything. Okay? You just have to be a strategist. And why am I telling you this? Because they do this on purpose. And you have to come into this game prepared to go at them at their own game. So like I said, I work with kids and I teach them strategy, but I don't teach them English and reading and math. I teach them what this test looks like. First thing I would do with you when you sat down with me is I'd take the test booklet, start on page one, and we're going to walk through it to show you what it looks like. Then I'm going to talk to you all about its characteristics before I ever teach you a strategy. Because you know what you all do when you play somebody? You watch film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you watch film?
To see what they're going to do.
Exactly. So that you can plan what you're going to do, right? That's exactly how you take an SAT. You look at them, look at all their tapes, and you plan what you're going to do. So, just in case you want to know, I don't tutor students as a business. I work with the coaches in the area. I just do volunteer work here and there. I see kids all over the place. I'm completely booked for every single day. I'm seeing a kid to help them with the SAT and for the May exam. I'm not looking for any business. I'm just giving you information. The PowerPoint is full of what you need. I can't possibly see all the students in Virginia, and I don't want to have a business or anything like that. I just want to help kids that come across my path. It's best if you work through your coach. It's nice when I can get to go out to a high school and work with several members of the team at once, because that way it's like helping more kids. So I have a good relationship with Warwick and Lynchville and with Demby, and I live in the New Britain area, so I kind of play those relationships. But I just want you to know, you need help before you take the SAT. If anyone tells you take the SAT to try it out, tell them to jump off a bridge and try it out. Okay? Because that's the same impact you're going to be, okay? All right? So don't take the SAT to try it out, because what you do is you learn terrible ways to answer questions, and then somebody's going to have to teach you how not to do that. And my case in point is because all of you were doing all the wrong behaviors every time I put a question on the board. So that's what I want you to know. Your body is going to urge you to do wrong things. You've got to regret that. So thank you for your time and your attention. Thank you.
I'm sorry for the pause like that, folks, but we seem to be back here on the Parents Coach and Parents Network, Blog Talk Radio Show. We had to get some things rocking and rolling over here at the Mike Scott basketball camp. We have quite a bit of time still left for the camp. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, we're back on the air, Blog Talk Radio Show. Like I said, I'm your host, M.A. Scott, and we're going to try to promise you another wonderful show. I'm going to go ahead and play a little something or some information that I played for you earlier. I'm going to play it again so that while we get situated here.
And with the 43rd pick in the 2012 NBA Draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Mike Scott from the University of Virginia.
And like I said, you know, congratulations to all the young men that was drafted recently. I had a chance to attend one young man's camp that was drafted the same year as Mike, Mr. Kyle Singh.
How do you meet and pick your agent?
They meet and pick you.
No, they don't.
Picking agents is just like picking a college. Soon as they hear about, there's a pretty good eighth grader. There's a ninth grader that can walk and chew gum. There's a tenth grader. We're going to see what's going on with his uncle. Let's see what's going on with his sister. Let's see what's going on with somebody in his circle, one of the coaches, an AAU coach. We're going to get in his circle. And that person is going to be the sounding board back to the agent in a lot of different cases. And more than one agent, by the way. Recruiting is a dog-eat-dog world. You got to get grandma.
Really?
Oh, no doubt. If they got grandma, you got
to
get grandma.
You
got
to go to grandma.
Side. Yes, indeed.
In this agent recruiting process, is champagning and campaigning involved?
Absolutely. With everyone I just mentioned, every step along the way, if it's going to help get me closer to the player, get me closer to the mom or the dad or to the uncle or to the AAU coach or to the player or to whoever's making a quality decision, absolutely yes.
See, this is one of the reasons I like doing this podcast, because I didn't know any of this stuff about 20 minutes ago. And now it makes a lot more sense. I'm about to quit my job and become an NBA agent.
It's almost like if I was a high school player right now and I was an All-American doing this podcast with you, there would be agents and college coaches and recruits trying to holler at you to gauge how close you are to me, and they're going to gauge that on how much influence you're going to have on my decision. Whether 1% or 99%.
And if, let's say, it was a high percentage, would they give me money?
They would do a lot of things for you. All of a sudden, Jacoby got on a new job.
They might not write a check, but that'd be taken
Jacoby
care of.
Working at some summer camp.
I need a table at this restaurant tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. Who's your favorite artist? Oh, you like Jay-Z? I'm about to call him right now.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's how it works. And sometimes, in a few cases, the player doesn't know what things happen. So it's snakes on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's a snake in your circle. It's a snake that's allowing this to happen from the outside, whether it's a college coach or agent, but it's not personal because it's business. They are credible agents. They are very good college recruits. They're excellent college coaches, but money's involved. Big business is involved.
Tell me about the relationship between the athlete and the agent.
When you have somebody to represent your best interest, you're really not on the phone when they make the calls on your behalf. So you hope that they're speaking your language, for representing your best interest, but you don't know what they're on the phone saying to a contractor or an endorser or a potential sponsor. You don't know what he's on the phone saying to a GM. You don't know what he's on the phone saying to an owner. You're just hoping that he's relaying the message that you're giving him, but you don't know.
How does that feel?
It makes you feel dumb.
Yeah.
But it's the professional part of it that it teaches you that you're just a worker. You're just a cog in this. He's going to be an agent for 30 years. You're going to play for 3 years. And when that's the case, there's always going to be some shady business.
Of course. I just want to clarify. I don't think you're saying the business itself is shady, but there are shady aspects when
like
you're talking about multi-million
conquest,
dollar.
Industry rule number 10,080. Recruiters and agents are shady.
Well, that was Jalen Rose, you know, like I said earlier, from the Fab Five back in the day. And, you know, he's just giving you some information on the recruiting scene and how things go and how things go and what else is happening out there in the world of basketball. Well, we're back here in the gym with the Mike Scott Basketball Camp. We have a number of young folks that's out here, and they're having a great time. Looking at all the faces and everything else that's going on. I'll be right back with you.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
Got there at 4 a.m., he all ready to rock and roll, got on the suit, should have wore short. The old man grabs his hand, said, how bad do you want to be successful? He said, real bad. He said, walk on out in the water. So he walks out into the water, watch this. When he walks out into the water, it goes way deep. So he's like, this guy crazy.